I'm speaking today with Ian McHenry, co-founder and CEO of Beyond Pricing. Beyond Pricing is a company which helps Airbnb rental owners set optimal prices. Now, what's really interesting is that Ian has a strong background in pricing what's called perishable inventory, such as hotel rooms and airline seats. But moving into the Airbnb realm posed quite a number of new challenges, and we're going to talk about some of the techniques he's used in that. Ian, it's great to have you with us today. Now, when we first spoke a couple months ago, the thing that really fascinated me about your approach to pricing is that much more than just being a predetermined pricing algorithm or method, it's something that's really closely tied in with feedback loops from the data.
Yep.
And that for me was really kind of an interesting take on things. And so that's what really inspired me to say, hey, let's talk a little bit about this and
sure.
And such.
So, yeah, no, that's great.
And Ian, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Beyond Pricing?
Yeah, sure. It's kind of a longish story, but we actually started, and for those that don't know, Beyond Pricing is a software as a service product that helps vacation rental owners as well as vacation rental property managers automatically adjust their prices based on fluctuations in supply and demand. And so it's a typical revenue management software similar to what hotels and airlines use. And so I actually came from the airline space primarily, as well as a little bit of hotels, as a management consultant over at Oliver Wyman, which actually has the largest airline practice in the world. And I focused on revenue management there. So we would go into all these big airlines and help them help them improve their revenue management. We did a little bit of hotels, a little eccentricity about management consultants. They charge, like McKinsey and Bain and all those types of guys. They charge, millions of dollars for their projects. And so it's quite expensive. And so you usually work with fairly centralized type companies. And so airlines do all their pricing actually in one place. Like corporate usually does all the pricing there. And then those prices go out for every single route around the world, whether it's Emirates or whether it's United or whoever. With hotels, they have interesting structure where a lot of the big brands like Marriott and Starwood, though now they're the same, actually franchise. And so there's individual property managers everywhere, as well as real estate investment trusts and owners of the actual real estate. And so pricing decisions are done much more locally. And so it's not as centralized. And so they can't afford these like multi-million dollar engagements from management consultants. So anyway, my background was all in pricing for airlines and hotels. And then around 2013, we kind of looked at the vacation rental space and noticed a couple of things and had a couple of theses there. What we saw was, on the one hand, there wasn't, while Airbnb and HomeAway and VRBO had come to prominence and Booking.com was getting into the space of offering private accommodations or vacation rentals, whatever you want to call them, and there was a lot of sophistication on the booking side. When it came to the other things that you see in the hotel space, like the consistency and the quality, a brand, that experience when you stay at a Marriott, whether in Shanghai or in New York, you kind of know what to expect. The vacation rentals, it was kind of all over the place. And so there was no real brand consistency and experience. On the other side of it, when it came to pricing and having prices change based on fluctuations in demand and all these types of things, people are very basic. It really did look a lot like hotels did 20 or so years ago, and many small hotels still behave in this way, where they might have a weekday rate and a weekend rate and maybe a high season and a low season. And when you look at the demand trends, it's much more variable than that. And so there was a lot of opportunity to increase everyone's revenue by applying sophisticated revenue management techniques and algorithms to that. And so our initial thesis was, okay, this is big growing space. I think now it's about 20% of all accommodations are private homes or vacation rentals. But there's this lack of sophistication in those two fronts. So when we first attacked it, it was all in one. We are actually a property manager and managed the properties for the owners and provided that consistent experience to guests. Mm-hmm. And we had a good proposition to the owners, which was, hey, maybe you took care of this yourself before. Let us take care of everything. Our commission was like 15% for managing all of that, but we can guarantee that we'll make you at least 15% more. The reality was, for a lot of these owners especially, they didn't even have high or low seasons. They had one single rate throughout the year. It was $200 every single night. And so we could see increases up to 40% or so on that. And so that made it selling it very, very easy. What we learned very quickly were a couple of things. One, we were not actually an operations company. My original co-founder really didn't like the operations side of it. And two, we saw, the property management side is relatively commodity. It's fairly easy to start one of these anywhere. It wasn't as defensible. But what was actually really hard was the pricing side. And we thought, hey, these little property managers are going to pop up in all these urban areas. And there's this existing set of what we call legacy property managers, folks that have been managing vacation rentals in traditional markets, ski, beach, lake, all those types of ones, non-urban. And they really need software like the hotels have. So we spun it out and then launched Beyond Pricing. Kind of around in 2014 to provide that to the space.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I can imagine that's
I
much
told you
more
it'd be long.
scalable. Yeah. No, good. I can imagine that solution is much more scalable also than property management alone, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And venture investors really like stuff that's scalable. We're now in, I think we're approaching 350 different global markets. Over 50,000 listings using us. If we were an individual property manager, we wouldn't be able to grow
I
nearly
can
that
imagine.
quickly. We'd maybe be in a couple markets or something like that.
Hey, but this figure you mentioned, this 40% increase, I mean that's pretty substantial. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, of course. And so, like the increase that you can get in any kind of pricing situation has to do with how inefficient the market is to begin with, right? And how inefficient the person you're helping out has been. So, for instance, if Apple was selling iPhones for $10,000 and maybe selling, three or four of them, if you came in and helped them with pricing optimization and got it down to, $600, of course you'd see a huge boost in revenue for them, right? Because they're completely priced out of the market. Same thing with us. If someone is pricing only $200 flat, and you imagine like a flat line across, on a graph. Across January through December. And then if they're doing that, then they're leaving a lot of money on the table for peak periods where they could charge more. And then they're also sitting empty when demand is lower, and they should be lowering prices to capture those bookings. And so really we look at it as that space between that flat line and that graph of optimal price, which goes above and below that. When it's above it, that's a net increase in price that they can get. When it goes below it, that's a booking that they're going to get at a lower price that they just wouldn't have gotten before. And so that space between those lines is the opportunity. And we've actually looked at this in a lot of markets, and like around 50%, 50 to 55% is the max for someone who's in the ballpark, right? Like again, in the Apple example, if they had a place that should be $200 a night, a one bedroom in Amsterdam, 200 euros a night, sorry. Want to be currency sensitive here.
Oh, absolutely.
If they were charging $10,000 a night for that, obviously every single we would lower they would get zero bookings, and they'd use us, and they'd get a an infinite amount more money. But really, that space between there, like the potential is about 50%. We get very close to that with our pricing algorithm. Now, if you think that straight line suddenly for those up parts of the graph where we're saying increased price, maybe they were actually increasing a little bit, and so that line goes up for that high season, then that decreases the opportunity, right? So maybe instead of 40% increases, we're starting to see 35% increases.
And
And as it gets closer to that line, right, it becomes closer to optimal, and so then the opportunity to increase is less. And so when we did this with hotels, right, and airlines, they were already pretty well optimized. Like they're very sophisticated. They have throw millions of dollars at this. They have all these people. And so we would get like 5% increases when we were lucky, well, when we were really good with the airlines. And we would make their like earnings reports because it
Which
was
is
all
still a
free.
huge dollar sign. I mean, when you're looking at that revenue, right? Even 5% is massive.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with billions of dollars of revenue. But so here, when we saw the 40%, it was like, wow, this is a really inefficient market.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, right? Because obviously, when we're doing these, like when I do the different data science projects with companies, when you can quantify the uptake, that's really key to proving the value, right? And any project with an uptake of 40 to 50% is unbelievably good. So the fact that you can quantify that is really, I think, a strong argument for that you're definitely doing something right. But what I wonder is that 40, is that something which is fairly stable over the past 3 years, or is it something where you're saying, hey, as the industry matures, our models are getting better and we can change that 40% estimate, or perhaps the people are getting smarter themselves and there's less of an uptake? Or how do you see that benefit from your product changing over time?
I mean, well, part of it is more people start as more people use our product, they become more efficient, right? So year over the first year, 40% increase. The next year, if you compare using us year over year, it's relatively stable, right? What is happening is, and the way that like that increase diminishes is usually based on, just people getting better at pricing. There is a downside to it though. The downside that we've seen is that there's a couple things, and it actually makes using sophisticated software like ours more important. In our market, supply is highly dynamic. With hotels, you have to build a building and all of that stuff to add supply into the market. With ours, the supply is what everyone's living in right now. They just decide to turn a home into a vacation rental instead. And so in markets like where we've seen it the most is like Osaka and Tokyo, which are the fastest growing markets for Airbnb, supply went from a couple thousand to over 12,000 units in a matter of a year. And so in that kind of a market, you have this downward pressure on prices, especially in the low season. And so like if you looked year over year, they actually might see a slight decrease in revenue using us. But it's less of a decrease than they would have seen if they had just kept prices high. For instance, like
Right, right. But that's sort of a standard supply and demand curve, right? So it's not
Sure.
that the revenue goes down, but the uptake from your models is not necessarily going down, right?
Right, exactly. So on the model front, this is why a lot of this gets very hard to measure, right? Is because there's, and we you even have this with big companies, right? They'll say, oh, like you came in and did this pricing stuff, but we also happened to do a big marketing push at the time, right? We think it was attributable to that, right? This is why with big companies, you would always do an A/B test where you try to sort out a section of theirs and a section of ours and run it for a long time. Here, the people that we're dealing with are, the largest are doing maybe, $50 million, $60 million a year in revenue, which is a lot less than $1 billion that the airlines would do. And so, they don't want to A/B test for a whole year to see stuff like that. And so it gets a little bit more difficult. In terms of the model, ours is similar. We have kind of similar dynamics to Uber, where when you get more cars on the road, the feedback loop gets better, right? For them, they're measuring, their two major, KPIs are, getting the right ETA. So when it says it's going to be there, the car is going to be there in 5 minutes, is it actually there in 5 minutes? And two is obviously the dynamic pricing model, which says how much should we increase stuff to sort of balance supply and demand on that. On the ETA model, when they launch in like a new city, they already have an advantage because they're already in so many other cities that they know, say, for instance, when they launch Shanghai, they already know from Beijing and all the cars on the road that like X number of miles equals Y number of minutes in general. And they can look at similar markets when they start out there to get that right ratio between distance and time. And then as they get more cars on the road in Shanghai, that gets better, right? You get that, quote, machine learning feedback loop where you can see and test and get that ratio tighter. Similar for us, like as we progress, it gets better because we can see what that kind of ratio is between increases in demand and what the increase in price should be. And that's always changing too. And so for us, like when we launch a new market, we look at at the demand curves and how those look and compare it to similar ones. So like we just launched in Sapporo, in Japan, which is close to the mountains, very highly seasonal, and it actually it looks in certain ways like other Japanese cities, but actually in more ways like ski towns in the U.S. and in Europe. And so when we see that surge in demand, say demand goes up 3x or whatever, we know that that equals a 6x price to start with. And then as we get there, what we'll see is okay, it starts off with that 6x price. But during those peak demands, are places booking up faster during those periods than other periods. If they still are booking up faster than they should be, then that, goes maybe from 6x to 7x. So that's the little bit of learning that goes in there where things get better and improve over time.
Okay. And I understand Airbnb has a similar offering that they built in and offer to their subscribers, I think, at no charge. Is that right?
About a year after we launched, they built something internally that looked very similar to ours.
Okay.
The results, though, if you look at it, it's an obvious problem, right? Which is, hey, you have this marketplace, and there's all these people who are listing their places. And if they're, there's kind of two dynamics for them where they really want optimal prices. And we were always aligned on this. We always say we actually help Airbnb more than like a host making 40% more. Airbnb takes a larger chunk of that. Because if they were initially, say, making $100, now they make $140. Our business model is we charge 1%. So from that $140, we would get $1.4.
So they're definitely doing better than you are. That's right.
Well, so they get 10%. So it goes up $40. They get 10% of that increase. Now they get $4. We get 1.4. So we actually benefit Airbnb more than we benefit ourselves. In general, when you're a marketplace, you want to make sure that things are balanced there, right? That prices aren't too high, and people come to your marketplace and then just leave and say, I'm going to go and just check out somewhere else, or I'm going to check out a hotel because everyone, is charging $200 a night for their crummy one bedroom in Chicago. I can go stay at the W for $100. Let me go there, right? Mm-hmm. If everyone's doing that in the marketplace, then nobody's booking on Airbnb. They're going over to Expedia and booking the hotel. So there's a definite need for it as a marketplace to provide that.
But if I'm looking at sort of the recommended prices that I would get standard from Airbnb, would I expect them to be pretty similar to what Beyond Pricing is giving, or is it a completely different methodology? Or
yeah, so there's two things there. It's a different methodology. And they're trying to solve for, their interests are different than ours. So a couple points on that. One, they're only looking at their internal data. Like they're only looking at Airbnb. We look across Airbnb, VRBO, hotels. And so we have a broader data set that we're looking at when we're looking for these fluctuations in demand. Two is, more than wanting to see what people are booking at, you really want to see, hey, when I suggest a price, does it get booked or not? And it's that feedback loop. And we actually have more people. We can see this by looking at average prices and markets. We have more people using Beyond Pricing than Airbnb has theirs. So we have this very big early lead, and it's just getting stronger, where we have more of those tests going on than they actually have. And so we can see that better. And then the third part on that is they have different incentives, right? They would rather go, I always say they would rather go from 1% of all accommodations to 10%, because that's a 10x increase, rather than optimize prices by 40%. That gets them from 1 to 1.4. And the way that you can do that, and the way that Uber has done that and Lyft has done that, is by subsidizing, but they can do that by lowering everyone's prices so that it's people choose to go to Airbnb versus somewhere else. And we see that. And you get that feedback if you search online for feedback on smart pricing. Everyone thinks those prices are ridiculous. We actually just had a user send us a note from Airbnb where they sent them an email that said, hey, somebody looked at your property and then booked this other place for $116 less. And then there's this other date where someone looked at your property, booked something else for $166 less per night. And I looked at her calendar that she's using Beyond Pricing for, and oh, guess what? She got booked at full price, $166 more using our prices later.
Amazing, amazing.
I mean, it's just there's so many of these little nuggets that we have that are just kind of fantastic. We're only working for the host and for the owner and for the vacation rental owner and trying to optimize their prices, and that's the only thing that we're aiming at. So, and then the last point is as platforms try to provide these pricing services, is more and more. It's great. eBay did this right for Beanie Babies and stuff like that, which they can say, hey, maybe you should charge this amount for it. The problem with that, and that's great for like people who are coming and once every 2 years they sell something. The majority of the business for eBay are power sellers. These are people who are listing on eBay, on Amazon. They have their own store. They have an Etsy store. And all their pricing really needs to be done centrally because they have multiple channels and there's demand, different demand on different channels. What we're seeing in the vacation rentals is there's different demand on Airbnb versus HomeAway versus elsewhere, and people are listing on all those channels, similar to how Hilton is on Expedia and Booking.com, their own website. And so you really need to take all of that information in. We've seen people, it's changing now, it's more similar, but before there was, you know, there's not as much underpriced inventory on HomeAway as there is on Airbnb. And so people who are searching typically just go to one site. They'll just go to VRBO or they'll go to Airbnb and look for a place there. VRBO had higher priced inventory there. And so when we see people start on Airbnb, start listing on HomeAway, they find they can actually list for a higher price. And so whereas they might have been at $150 a night on Airbnb and booking at the right pace and filling up at the right rate, when they suddenly start listing at that same price on HomeAway, they book up way too fast. And our system automatically increases that, say, to $200. And what you'll find is a lot of those bookings that actually shift to HomeAway because that kind of prices them out of the Airbnb market, which is totally fine and how that should work. So that's, you know, as soon as you're on multiple channels, you really need something that's independent of the channel when it comes to pricing.
And Ian, can you say a bit more about the role that feedback loops play in your models?
Yeah, I mean, to that point, it's especially when you're small, it's great because you get these feedback loops, not even just from the data, but even from customers, right? Which is alerts yourself to it. And there's just, you know, you kind of need that human element in it to actually see how it's playing out there. And the fact that we all have our own vacation rentals too is actually really useful. Like we built this for ourselves. And the more that, like, I don't know if you talked about this a bit or others have talked about this, is just the more that, like, data scientists don't sit in a silo and interact with everyone else, I think the more useful a lot of what they do kind of becomes, yeah. Especially in modeling like that. I mean, it's tiring, like, going through and, like, seeing all these, because you create this, and I mean, like, we created it and we're great, and, like, stuff changes. Like, there's things that you don't recognize, and, like, how do you make your model more responsive? Like, how do you bring in more factors?
Okay. No, and so this is one of the really interesting things, I think, and one of the reasons I wanted to speak with you about this technique is it's very much data-driven, right? It's very much more data-driven than model-driven, as far as I understand it. Would you say that's an accurate statement?